Three of the five seats on Visalia City Council will be decided by voters on Election Day, November 8, 2005. In September, each of the eight certified candidates were given the opportunity to be interviewed by freelance reporter and interviewer Chris Haberman of Visalia. Each bona fide news interview is about 30 minutes in length and will be broadcast exclusively on KVLP throughout this election season. You're listening to 101.5 KVLP LP Visalia Local Power. Freelance reporter Chris Haberman interviews Visalia City Council candidate Don Landers.
Well, I'm here at City Hall with Don Landers, who is running again for the City Council of Visalia. Don, thanks so much for meeting with us.
My pleasure.
I know the people at KVLP will be very interested in what you have to say. It's got quite a field this time, eight people running for three seats.
Entirely unusual, though.
Is that right?
Yes, with three positions open, there's typically 6 to 10 candidates.
Wow. Well, what made you want to jump back in again?
Well, I've enjoyed a lot of successes during my time on the council. I was first appointed to the council in 1995 after serving 3 years on the Planning Commission from 92 to 95. So I had a background in the Planning Commission arena, and I had some definitive ideas about public safety and government in general and providing services to the public, and those kind of encompassed in my overall philosophy that government should do for the people that which the private sector cannot or will not do. Meaning primarily we should be about the business of providing basic services to the public first and foremost, and then to the extent that we can increase the quality of life in the community and we can afford that, then try and do things like that, such as parks and recreation are an obvious necessity, and and providing those facilities is important to the community as well as the council.
Well, so you've actually been on the council then for coming on, well, actually 10 years now, huh?
That's correct.
Wow.
I just had my 10th anniversary on September the 5th.
Well, you've seen quite a bit of growth take place in the city over the last number of years.
Yeah, when I first got on the council, there was approximately 91,000 people. We had approximately 91 police officers in 1995. Today, we're approaching 126 police officers, so... Public safety, again, my background has been in law enforcement. I worked for the sheriff's office for the past 34 years, where I still work. I'm a lieutenant and currently assigned to internal affairs. So law enforcement's not an unfamiliar arena in which I travel, and public safety in general. I used to be a fireman and worked for the California Division of Forestry before I got into law enforcement. Prior to that, I used to drive an ambulance. So I have a pretty good background in public safety services that are provided to the public. And those are quintessential services for the community that gives us an opportunity to enjoy the quality of life that we have here in Visalia. And clearly, it doesn't matter how much quality we have in the community. If you can't enjoy that quality, whether it's going to the baseball park or going to the skateboard park or going to the new fun park, the Adventure Fun Park out on 198, you can't go out there and participate in those activities and know that you're in an environment where it's safe and you're comfortable, then that quality of life is not as high as it could be or should be. So public safety has always been one of my primary concerns in our community, and I've worked real hard. For the most recent success was the Measure T quarter-cent sales tax, and that's going to provide us the ability to finance the employment of 28 additional police officers over a five-year period of time, as well as start the precinct police stations in the north and south end of the community, as well as add two additional fire stations and additional firemen to staff those. So those are critical issues. We've also got into the emergency medical system here in Tulare County. The Board of Supervisors controls that service. And just last Tuesday, in fact, the first part of September, they voted to allow us to provide paramedic service to the citizens of Visalia and the rest of Tulare County. So that's a very significant improvement in the level of service to the community, and one that we've endorsed, and we will be providing the training to the existing firefighters, and future firefighters that are hired in the city will be required to already have that licensing.
So instead of hiring just paramedics, you would give the training to the existing fire personnel?
Yes.
That's great. Well, with regard to some of the other issues that have gone on for the past few years, what do you see as been some of the more important decisions that came before the City Council, and where did you stand on them?
Well, I guess I go back to my term when I started in office. I think one of the most significant decisions that I participated in was the selection of our current city manager, Steve Solomon. He's had a tremendous, done a tremendous job. He's had the foresight and ability to develop resources for the council to accomplish the vision of the council. One of the first things that I talked to Steve about was the signature theaters and the downtown parking structure back in 96 when he first took office. And my vision included having the signature theaters as a mechanism to make the downtown a destination, to create the feeling of a destination for recreation, for other activities downtown, and then have the parking structure built, which we did ultimately create a 450 plus or minus, I think it was 483 spaces totally across the street from the convention center.
Right.
And those were definitely badly needed services that we hadn't been able to accomplish prior to Steve's arrival. And he was able to develop different funding sources and cumulatively build the parking structure and encourage and entice and actually get the developer to build the signature theaters, which I think has been a very, very big success in our downtown.
Oh, yeah.
So, I mean, that's clearly some of the major things, or the first major things anyway. Steve's had an ability to take the consensus vision of the council and develop plans to incorporate those into our funding mechanisms and our financing. And in fact, over the last 10 years, we've seen our reserves grow from when I first got on the council around $55 million up to a total of about $108 million today. And a lot of those funds are designated reserves for things like the new civic center, the new police stations, the new fire stations, and a lot of the capital infrastructure that makes the city what it is today. So without the ability to, you know, cut back on existing staffing levels back in the early 90s, late 80s, we had some very significant population of employees to population of citizens. So we might have had 7 employees per 1,000. Today we're down around 5 employees per 1,000. So we've incorporated more efficiency into the operation, resulting in savings that have allowed us to do as good or better of a job with less resources and less cost. Additionally, we've looked at other expenses that all companies have to deal with. First and foremost is the workers' compensation issue.
Oh, yeah.
We had some significant expenses associated with that. Our last year's expected cost was $2.4 million for that particular item. A significant hit, even with an organization with 500 employees. We were able to develop a self-funding mechanism that reduced that cost by two-thirds, down to $800,000.
Wow.
So those types of creative financing that has stop loss built into it so we don't put the city at risk have been paid off significantly. And the employees get a lot of credit for that, too, because they've increased their awareness and safety issues. And,
sure.
To the extent that they're not getting injured on the job, that reduces our experience, as they call it, and also reduces our costs. So. Just the financing of city government, being creative, implementing more efficiencies, has reduced smoother, more efficient operation at a lesser cost. We've also built into the overall budget some user fees that make the people that use whatever services we're talking about, whether it's garbage or whatever, pay for the cost of those services so that the general fund is not supplementing those services, and it allows us to continue to fund our police and fire and other public safety and general funded items at a level that's very significant.
You're listening to 101.5 KVLP LP Visalia Local Power. Freelance reporter Chris Haberman interviews Visalia City Council candidate Don Landers.
So an awful lot of growth has taken place over the last few years, new neighborhoods being created, that sort of thing. Do you see that this growth has impacted the delivery of services?
No, we've had a good plan and a good vision in place, and we've implemented that plan to include, you know, a minimum of 3 additional police officers each budget period, which is a 2-year budgeting period. That equates to 1.5 police officers per year, but 3 every 2 years. We've also made the plans for additional fire stations and mapped out the locations and response times from those locations. And again, the Measure T was a big part of financing that particular endeavor. And it's really, it demonstrates how the community cares about itself and how they take care of themselves. And they're willing to pay for services that they recognize are important to their quality of life. We've been fortunate enough when we First started off looking at parks and recreation. We were going to buy a 16-acre park over in the southwest part of town and call it a new community park. And we thought, you know, why should we buy 16 acres when the need is far, far more significant, especially as it relates to soccer and baseball?
Right.
We have a tremendous population in our community that places very heavy demands on our available soccer resources and soccer fields.
Yeah, softball playing fools.
The school district, we have a very good relationship working with them, and it allows us to actually utilize some of their resources that are taxpayer paid for.
Yeah.
And make available fields to the soccer players. But the need did not seem to diminish any as we had more people come to our community. We had more soccer players. It's a very good outdoor activity. So we decided to try and increase that from 16 acres. And we initially tried to buy a 50-acre parcel on the southeast side of town. But we were not successful in buying that. Somebody else bought it at a higher price than what it appraised
sure.
at. And
yeah.
So we looked around some more, and we found the parcel up on the Shannon Ranch on North Dinuba Highway and in the St. John's River. And we were able to buy 83 acres. So that was a significant purchase and will accomplish some goals that we had set for ourselves to increase the level of playing fields that are available for the kids that want to play baseball, softball, and soccer. And it'll be a multi-use complex that will incorporate in a couple of basketball fields and tennis courts,
right.
Small tot lots, if you will, as well as some area for handicap accessible lots.
Right. So let me ask you this. You know, there have been a number of projects that have actually expanded the city in the last few years. So I understand that you've actually fallen on different sides of the issue on different projects. Would you like to comment on those and what your philosophy has been about growth in the city? And, of course, I'm referring to things like Packwood Creek or some of the new housing developments that have where, you know, we've been building outside the city boundaries and then bringing them in or whichever order it comes in.
Well, actually, we're not building outside the city boundaries. What we're doing is back in 1991, we had a general plan, which is a state-mandated plan that consists of seven elements. One of those elements is a land use element, and one of them is a zoning element. And they have to be consistent, as well as a circulation element. And the plan called for, in 1991, we had about 81,000 people. And it called for, over a 30-year period of time, a doubling of that population to about 165,000 people.
Okay.
So that equates to about a 2.4% rate of growth each of the succeeding years from 1991 to the year 2020. And that's where we get the name 2020.
2020 plan.
Right. The 1990s were somewhat of a depressed time. Prices were down. Interest rates were down. The economy was not doing real well, and we did not have a lot of growth. Mm. Our growth rate was around 1.2%, or half of what was actually forecast in the plan. Mm. So the plan had called for us to, again, grow concentrically from the center of the city, meaning downtown.
Outward,
in each of three successive rings. And the plan was very well written. It was calling for 70% of the property within the first ring to be built out. It called for the year 2000 to be, you know, on the calendar before we would go to the next ring, as well as the population being at 100,000. Well, we had achieved the benchmark established as far as the year 2000. We had achieved the benchmark called for in the plan of having 70% of the available land in the first ring being built out. Mm. And the purpose for that is to make sure that we're growing, again, concentrically. But the purpose for that is to give an even, consistent growth to the community. It grows in all four segments, not just one. It makes good use of our infrastructure so that we're not making large highways or sewer lines and all the infrastructure that makes a city work. We're not bypassing those particular items to get to an area that doesn't have them.
Okay.
So the idea is to grow to where the infrastructure is planned in these different growth plans and the different elements of the general plan. So in the year 2000, we went to the state, and they told us that our population, according to the U.S. Census, was actually somewhere around 95,000. So we did not achieve that benchmark specified in the plan. We did not allow the builders to go into the second ring of the three rings. Along towards the end of the year 2003, the California Department of Finance issued a statement saying that our population had, in fact, reached the 100,000 mark. thus achieving all three of the primary benchmarks, the year 2000, which is now 2003, the population, which is now 100,000, and that the build-out within the first ring had achieved that 70% or more build-out.
Okay.
And all of those benchmarks were achieved, so at that point in time, we allowed the builders to go into the second ring of that three-ring concentric growth circles around the city.
And where would our listeners identify that second ring as being? I mean, just, you know, as far as neighborhoods around or streets? Or
well, it's almost impossible to tell you because it's such a jagged thing. If you wanted to, I could, you know, make a map available to you and you could describe it to the listeners. But I would say in general, you know, obviously we had the area out there on McAuliffe that had already been developed.
Okay.
East of Lover's Lane.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
However, you go south to Walnut, and then you come back west to Lover's Lane. So Lover's Lane and Walnut would be a key area. You go south on Lover's Lane to Caldwell.
Right.
Then you go west on Caldwell to about Court Street, south a little bit on Court Street, but not very much.
Mm-hmm.
Primarily, it stays pretty much along Caldwell. Goes out to the west side of Mooney Boulevard to DeMarie area. There was some construction just south of Caldwell and west of DeMarie. Couple of streets out there. It goes clear over to essentially Linwood area.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And it goes back up to Caldwell and west on Caldwell, basically out to Acres, north on Acres to Whitendale. Now, there's some construction on both sides of Whitendale, but essentially west on Whitendale to Robin, north on Robin up to 198, and north of 198. There was a little area north of a setback north of 198 that was allowed to be built.
Right.
And it continues on north up into the northwest part of the community. Essentially, I'm going to say it's south of Riggin.
Mm-hmm.
Even Ferguson would be more definitive. And then east along that line over to roughly DeMarie, north on DeMarie to, not even that, just continue on east, south on DeMarie to Houston, east on Houston, the area around Houston and Mooney was developed, north on Mooney up towards Birdland.
Right, right.
But the Birdland area is county island, so it'd go up to about Ferguson again, and east on Ferguson over to the North Visalia area, and continuing on east over towards McAuliffe.
Okay.
So that's in general, but it's really difficult without looking at a map to really visualize or picture that. Those maps are available at City Hall.
Right.
If somebody wanted to really look at them,
and so that would have been the second, where the second ring of growth would be identified. And so the lid was kind of removed, or that area was opened up by the council for development.
Yeah. And then the area out in the second ring, a lot of people seem to identify with Shannon Ranch as they'll call it sprawl, or they'll call it leapfrog development.
Mm-hmm.
When the reality is, the plan called for that particular area, which is at the northern edge of the second ring, to be developed at whatever time frame that the owner of the property determined was appropriate. So anybody between the first ring and the second ring could develop at any time they chose. So there's a lot of development activity that's occurred within that second ring around the peripheral of the city.
Okay.
But it's not sprawl or leapfrog development, as some people have characterized it. It's truly within the exact terminology and language and within the specifics that have been identified in the general plan.
Okay.
And to the extent that that's, it's not been challenged anywhere in court, so it's a little bit hypocritical to say that it's leapfrog development, because it's not. It's exactly what the plan called for.
So, as I've talked to, you know, various candidates throughout my interviewing process, lots of people talk about the idea of building infill or building, you know, more homes and different kinds of housing developments inside or closer into the city center, and that there are lots of spaces available. What do you say about that?
Well, and that's a great concept, but the reality is, the plan was developed in 1991, and people have purchased property and made investments based on what the plan, how the plan was written. And for a council to come along some 15 mm-hmm. years later and say, well, we've changed the rules now, and your investment that you made at $200,000 an acre is now worth $30,000 an acre, is tantamount to taking away property value from a property owner. And, you know, I have just some problems with the government getting into our lives any more than necessary. There's enough government rules and regulations. The rules say you can grow within that second ring, and the people that own property in there have the right to do that, and I support that right.
You're listening to 101.5 KVLP LP Visalia Local Power. Freelance reporter Chris Haberman interviews Visalia City Council candidate Don Landers.
Okay. So you mentioned the Packwood Creek development earlier.
You were on the other side of that vote, right?
I was the one council member that voted against that. It was a 4-1 vote, and I did not support the development of the Packwood Creek at that time. It's an excellent project. It provides tremendous opportunity for shopping to the people in Tulare County as well as Visalia. It's a beautiful complex and generates a lot of sales tax for the city. But I felt that the promise the state made to the city was that they were going to build a 6-lane road from 198 down to Packwood Creek.
Okay.
And that was supposed to be completed in the year 2005.
Mm.
Now, we're in September of 2005, and the state has not even purchased the right-of-way to begin the process, let alone to actually do the construction. And now they're estimating it'll be 2009 before that's done. And I honestly, when I voted against that, I felt that the infrastructure required to make that a functional project that would meet the goals and needs and quality of life in the city of Visalia was not going to be there. And I think that another 3 months from now, they'll prove me right, because I don't see the state building that project, especially now that we have the Katrina issue, and federal funding will probably be less available to states and local governments for those types of projects. So I'm not envisioning Mooney Boulevard being completed in 2009 as they expected or as they promised us now. You know, and I don't see anybody at the state level saying, you know, you can take my paycheck if it's wrong. You know, I don't have a lot of faith in their commitments. I don't have a lot of faith in the statements they make, because they've proved themselves to backtrack on those commitments too many times in the past. So I think anybody that lives in Visalia generally does their best to avoid Mooney Boulevard as much as possible. You know, we have other circulation issues back in the late 70s. Giddings was stopped at Whitendale.
Mm-hmm.
That was an effort to try and force growth to occur in certain segments of the community. And essentially, it was trying to divert from the private sector and the will of the public what they wanted. And now we have congestion. When you go down Giddings and dead end at Whitendale, it forces traffic over to Mooney Boulevard, exacerbating the problem. So I think that was probably a tremendously bad decision for the wrong reasons. I mean, there were some people on Giddings that thought that the traffic would increase and things would be bad and woe is me. But the reality is, all of the circulation studies proved and demonstrated that that's what should happen. And we have a circulation element that calls for a series of arterials and collectors. And you have an arterial every half mile, and you have a collector every quarter mile in between those two collectors. Giddings was a collector. I beg your pardon. It was an arterial. It is a collector. It was supposed to go all the way through to Caldwell.
Right.
And it would help take some of that traffic off of Mooney Boulevard.
Mm-hmm.
But when they stopped it at Mooney Boulevard and allowed the subdivision design to take place south of Whitendale, it precluded Giddings from ever going through to Caldwell.
Right.
Tremendously bad decision, in my opinion. And frankly, there's probably not a lot any future council can do to rectify that decision. So I just felt really strong that the infrastructure required to continue to provide the circulation we need in the community was not going to be there as the states had promised. And I felt like we were premature, and not that it's a bad project, because it is a great project.
Huh.
And it's kind of ironic that people will sit at Mimi's or the Olive Garden restaurant, two of the restaurants that wouldn't be here without the housetops. I mean, we all enjoy a certain degree of amenities in this community because we've been able to have the rooftops, as they say, in the construction industry that provides the impetus and the incentives for these corporations to locate their businesses in our community. And Mimi's is very popular. PetSmart's popular. Petsco's coming. Target enlarged. We've got Lowe's and Home Depot and Office Depot.
Mm-hmm.
All these different types of businesses that make our lives a little bit easier, and we don't have to go to Fresno to shop at those stores, would not be available without the rooftops that we have in our community.
Well, let me ask you this, Don. What other issues do you think are important that ought to be addressed, and that if you became city councilman again, that you'd like to see tackled in the next couple of years?
Well, we've had some great successes in the past. You know, some of the things that I've, you know, taken great pleasure in was the sale of the Radisson Hotel. That was another foray of a past council during the 80s into the private sector. And again, my basic philosophy is the government should provide those services for the public that the private sector cannot or will not provide. And since the Radisson Hotel was built, and subsequently I was on the council that sold that hotel, we've seen three additional hotels built in this community by the private sector. I think that demonstrates that the private sector will come to the meet the needs of a community if there's an incentive in the form of profit to be made. And I feel like the Radisson Hotel was a bad decision. We should not have gotten into that. And that was the main incentive that I had to get involved in the thing to begin with. Hmm. Another one of the issues is economic development. You know, we've enjoyed great successes in the past, and we'll continue to enjoy those successes as long as we continue to pursue and provide for those companies that will provide jobs to us. Cigna is a classic example. Hmm. Cigna's got about 1,000 jobs for this community. They pay fairly well. I mean, none of them are $50 an hour jobs, but they're paying more than minimum wage. You know, I'm proud of the fact that we finally got a family fun park. That's something that we've worked on for the 10 years that I've been on the council. We had a lot of tough negotiations, and we were successful to get the kind of park we wanted that met the needs of the private sector with the freeway location and the visibility. But it provides another resource to our younger members of the community to, you know, recreate and have something to do.
Hey, I play a miniature golf out there myself.
Yeah, it's a great place. The Measure T quarter-cent sales tax was a great, in my opinion, a great decision that this public demonstrated their willingness to invest in their own safety. Okay. So that's going to allow us to continue to add additional police and fire. We have another 700-space parking structure planned for the downtown that will provide for the hospital expansion, which is another big issue for us.
Will that be available for other people to park in besides the hospital?
Yes, it will. There will be a 700-space parking structure along the Sequoia. But the primary purpose of that parking structure is to provide spaces for not only the employees of the hospital, but the visitors to the hospital, and take those cars off of Main Street so the public can go down and shop on Main Street. Mm-hmm. So you'll find employees parked there. There'll be some dedicated parking for some folks that have businesses along there that were displaced because of the street-level parking that was removed.
Right.
We have the new Garden Street Plaza downtown, which I think was a vision of the council to continue to promote the arts in the city, which is very important to me. We're planning a future civic center for the city of Isaiah.
Out on the east side of town.
Yeah. We're in the 700 block of west of Sequoia. The future civic center is proposed to be in the 600 block of East Oak Street. So instead of being 7 blocks west of Main, we'll be 6 blocks east of Main. And instead of being a couple of streets south of Main Street, we'll be a couple of streets north of Main Street. So we're just about the same distance from the center of the city as if you look at Court and Main as a center.
Speaking of Garden Street, just quickly, you were on the city council that decided to use eminent domain to, with regard to the old Main Street Theater where the Enchanted Playhouse is. And I know that there was some controversy with regard to that. Do you have any comment concerning?
Well, we've been instructed by our city city attorney not to comment on that issue. It's
because
currently pending
litigation. Is that right? Okay.
And so I've been asked not to discuss that issue. And it's unfortunate, but that's just the nature of the beast, and so I'm not going to be able to comment on that.
No, fair enough.
And especially given some of the other good things I talk about, we've got an off-campus center for the Cal State University Fresno where you can get a four-year college. I've been working on getting a four-year college here. A four-year degree is better than nothing, and that's a start in the right direction.
Oh, absolutely.
We've got the Recreation Park baseball stadium that we improved. Mm-hmm. We've started providing passport services for the community. We've got the Joanne Stores Distribution Center that's provided about 300 or 400 jobs here in our community. We worked on the High-Speed Rail Authority, trying to get high-speed rail coming through the western edge of the city as opposed to going through Hanford, or not stopping at all in Central Valley.
Right.
The Hanford Amtrak station has the second highest level of ridership in the valley, and yet they're considering not stopping in the Central Valley, and I think that's a shame, something we need to work for. Mm-hmm. Something that we don't hear much about is the Lake Cuyah Terminus Dam project. You know, we raised the level of the dam up there to provide for additional flood protection that would hopefully keep us from having the problem that they're having back in New Orleans right now.
Right.
We had a new postal service building that was the focus of my mayor's statement when I was seated as the mayor in 1999. I called for the resources of the city to marshal the post office to build a new post office in this community. That was the site that was selected, and
Is that the one over on Acres?
Acres and Mineral King. It's been a tremendous asset to our community. Again, economic development, the quality of life starts with a job, any way, shape, or form you look at
it. Right.
Along with public safety. So we've worked real hard on participating in economic development issues. We've traveled far and wide to try and provide the best service we can. Our latest victory, if you will, was the VF Distribution Center, provide another 350 jobs. We had the Cross Valley Railroad project, where there was a total of about five different public service entities in conjunction was able to upgrade the rail service from Huron to Goshen, allowing us to take large numbers of semi-truck and trailers off of Highway 198 between here and Lemoore Naval Air Station.
Uh-huh.
Now, that doesn't seem like a big deal, but the city of Visalia has a lot of residents that travel to Lemoore and Hanford, mm-hmm. or to and from Hanford and Lemoore to come to Visalia to work. And the safety issues associated with keeping those trucks off the road was just far too important to forego that opportunity of multi-agency funding sources.
Bad fog, too, along that stretch.
Another really big thing that I'm real happy with is the purchase of the Glen Rand Juvenile Hall site. That was just a blight on the north side of our community.
Yeah.
We've developed that into a little nonprofit park. We'll have a police station there. We've got Community Service Employment Training, or CSET, there. Proteus and Visalia Unified School District and multiple other nonprofits will be there. Mm-hmm. But that really will help to dress up that area and make it a much nicer area.
Well, Don, I want to thank you. We've run out of time, but I know that this is going to be very informative for our listeners, and I really wish you well and good luck in the election.
Well, I appreciate it very much. Good talking to you.
All right.
You're listening to 101.5 KVLP LP Visalia Local Power. Freelance reporter Chris Haberman interviews Visalia City Council candidate Don Landers. As a licensed broadcast station, KVLP is serious about the obligation to operate in the public interest and to afford reasonable opportunity for the discussion of conflicting views of issues of public importance. KVLP does not support or oppose any candidate. No money, service, or other valuable consideration has been directly or indirectly paid or promised to or charged or accepted by KVLP from any person or persons or corporation, committee, association, or other unincorporated group or other entity. KVLP is not required to permit the use of its facilities by any candidate and by policy does not grant such requests. Any rebroadcast of this unique news presentation is a violation of FCC regulations. Please email your comments to kvlp@radio.fm. Stay tuned to 101.5 for more candidate interviews throughout this election season. And remember, if you don't register, you can't vote.